Welcome to the 31st episode of A Change of the Chance. My name is Ryan Lowe, and my goal is to educate listeners, especially young ones, on the issues in this world by interviewing different experts who can lead us into the charge for change. For decades, whether it's through media, Hollywood, or through political campaigns, cannabis or marijuana has been portrayed and affirmed again and again as a drug, or at the very least, something that is harmful, illegal, or with a negative connotation. But past the stigma, in the last decade, it has become a shifting industry with huge economic and health benefits, backed by a momentum towards legalization with opportunities for marginalized communities. Admittedly, this is not a topic that I know a whole lot about, but I was intrigued by the potential opportunities the cannabis industry can provide, and also felt compelled to expose the racism that has surrounded the industry and the unequal incarceration for people of color when arrested for cannabis possession. As you know, this podcast focuses on major issues from fossil fuels, mental health, to voter suppression, and cannabis is on the forefront of the social justice movement today in ways that few people know about. So here to talk to us today about that, about the cannabis industry, the past injustices, and the future opportunities for the communities who've been wronged by legislations, we have Ms. Deepa Sood, the CEO of Citizen Grown, an organization helping its clients by allowing them to benefit off of cannabis in healthy moderation while educating communities on why this is important. So how are you doing today, Ms. Sood?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
It's really great to see you and to have this opportunity because, as I said, I don't know anything.
Well, good. You shouldn't. I want to start by saying people your age should not be consuming the product that I will be talking about.
Yeah. So this is as you just said, this is a tough topic for youth to fully grasp. So let's start by going back to the beginning. What have been some of the stigmas around cannabis and how were they formed?
Sure. You know, I think that your listenership could really benefit from a brief history of cannabis regulation in general. So people have been using cannabis for, I think, like 12,000 years. It's a plant. It's found in the most ancient writings as being a source of medicine and curing ailments. It was first regulated in the United States around 1937. And interestingly, what was actually regulated was hemp. Hemp is what cannabis is derived from. And if you go, we don't have time today to go back in the long, long sordid history of the hemp regulation, but it was actually spearheaded by people such as William Randall Hearst, who didn't want product like hemp to compete with his trees. The Constitution was written on hemp, I believe. Many of the founding fathers wrote on hemp. Anyway, modern legalization began in about 1937 as a tax. It was in relation to hemp. Ultimately, that tax on hemp was overruled for reasons unrelated to cannabis. And then it wasn't until 1970 that cannabis was placed on something called the Controlled Substances Act. So 1970, that wasn't that long ago, right? That put everything we use as a quote unquote drug into a couple of schedules. Schedule one was something that the government decided had literally no value, no purpose, no reason to research, and was nothing except dangerous. Things like heroin are on schedule one. And that is where cannabis landed.
Huh.
I'm going to keep going for 1 second, Ryan, because the reasons behind that could fill volumes, very tellingly, I'm going to paraphrase a quote that since 1970, people from that administration, the Nixon administration, who basically spearheaded and created the war on drugs, have come out and said, yeah, we made that up. And you're like, what do you mean? What did you make up? We made up the harms. We fabricated how bad it was. We had a war against the counterculture, which at that point was basically hippies and Black people. And one man, Mr. Ehrlichman, came out and specifically said that we designed cannabis legislation in order to incarcerate Black people. So if you want to talk about stigma, that's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, I mean, Nixon administration, already some problems there. Everything does seem to go back to racism in many ways. And we did learn a little bit about this in health class last year.
Yeah. So interestingly, if you look at that, starting from 1970, like the actual origin story of cannabis legislation was based in racism. And then you fast forward to how the laws were actually, you know, applied, and you get to after the Nixon administration, there were people in jail went from around 300,000 to about 2.3 million because of the war on drugs. Half of the people in jail 10 years after Nixon's regime were in jail for drug-related crimes. And two-thirds of those people were people of color. So when Nixon and his team set out to create a system that put people of color in jail using cannabis, they were effective in what they were doing.
Yeah. Can we go a bit more into that racial dynamic and why there was such a difference between like Black incarceration and white incarceration for possession of marijuana?
Sure. I mean, your guess is as good as mine in the sense that, like, why does that racial disparity exist now? It's easy to look, and actually it's not easy, but the same issues we're grappling with now about why are Black people prosecuted more for the same crimes. It was the same then. It was probably the same before then, but cannabis is a good inflection point to see that what we're dealing with now is not new.
As you said, this has been a problem in tons of different issues for the majority of history. So
yeah. Okay, another point, though, to stigma. The history is actually fascinating if people want to dig into it, because you look back on the war on drugs and even taking racism out of it, talking just about what was done to an entire culture, there was such a machine behind fear and teaching people that, you know, you might not remember this, but my generation saw an ad that showed an egg and said, this is your brain. And then they showed a frying pan, and then they showed the egg frying on the pan and said, this is your brain on drugs. Any questions? And we watched that on our three TV channels that we had, and we're like, oh my God, that's terrible. Like, drugs are so evil. And at that point, come on, like, keep the snowball effect going of a Schedule One drug up there with heroin. Children are thinking that's the most incredibly terrible, scary thing one could ever do. Fast forward from that, you go to college, you experiment a little bit with weed, and you're like, hold on, my brain is not frying on the frying pan. Everything's fine. Were they lying to me? So one of the strange byproducts of Nixon's regime was a generation of people who distrusted what the government was telling them about many things, including drugs, and then dug into the history and saw the impetus for the legislation, and then started scratching their heads and saying, what am I being spoon-fed? But a second point to your stigma question probably has to do with a larger issue of what does cannabis do? Is it inherently dangerous, right? There's so much literature on this, but it's a really good starting point in understanding what cannabis is. It is, cannabis is composed of about 160, I'll geek out in science for you for a second. In the cannabis plant, there's 11 major cannabinoids, but there's 160 cannabinoids. The main ones we know are THC and CBD. I'll get to that in a second. But cannabinoids are basically chemical structures that bind to certain receptors in your brain. These receptors are part of our nervous system that control almost every aspect of human functioning. They regulate eating, memory, emotional processes, sleep, pain. And what happens with cannabis, with THC and CBD and the other cannabinoids, is that they will bind to receptors and produce effects. All of this is not only normal, our bodies create itself things very, very molecularly similar to cannabinoids. We rely on it for much of our functioning. THC and CBD are very different. The most basic difference is that one is quote unquote psychoactive. It makes you feel high, and one does not. I think that's how most people understand cannabis right now. Many people think THC is bad. It makes you high. I think there's a growing sentiment that people think CBD is less bad. It doesn't make you high, but they are actually molecularly identical. They're both C12H30O2. They're the same carbon atoms, hydrogen atoms, and oxygen atoms. They're just a little bit shaped differently, and they bond to the different receptors in your brain. I told you I'd geek out a little bit.
Yeah.
But the stigma derives from THC. The stigma derives from reefer madness and people thinking, oh my God, I smoke weed every day and I'm stupid. That's what popular culture has given us. Going back up a couple levels, one would say, well, if cannabis apologists are, if it's so good for you, why aren't there any studies? This also goes back to the 1970s Controlled Substance Act, because when cannabis was listed as a Schedule I drug, it made research on cannabis nearly impossible. Nobody was allowed to get a cannabis plant to study. Nobody was ever allowed to get funding for cannabis. So effectively, we were foreclosed from understanding exactly what this plant can do.
Yeah, two things. First of all, I took the chemistry test today. So
how did that go?
It's good, but you're geeking, you feel better about taking it. And then other thing, I can assure you that I don't think people are teaching that stuff in schools. Like, would you say that education about what you were talking about with cannabis and its history is really important to be added in schools?
You know, I never want to be, some of my colleagues somehow go down a slippery slope of becoming people who think that cannabis is the end all and be all. It's a wonder drug. It's going to solve all of our world's problems. I don't want to be that person. It is still a drug. It still affects your brain chemistry. There are still pros and cons. That being said, I absolutely believe that there's two main buckets of things that should be taught more properly in school, maybe not like every level of school. One is the history and social justice implications of cannabis legislation. It has profound effects on understanding systemic racism in our country. And more importantly, very importantly, understanding what to do with it at a right now crucial moment, because we're not talking about things we can't change. The cannabis economy right now is literally just beginning. So there are actual ways that we can affect change for these people who have been wronged. I feel like sometimes a lot of kids can throw up their hands and be like, well, what do I do about these problems? There's so much history of bad. This is happening right now. Legalization for cannabis is happening right now. It's still only legal recreationally in 23 states. So understanding the narrative and the history of why there is a social justice issue at the crux of this can really help probably shape and gain support for legislation going forward. That's one big bucket of what people should study. The other big bucket is science. It should be understanding what the plant actually does, because I hope that like in the next years, as cannabis goes down the road of being at least rescheduled, hopefully descheduled, I don't think it should be on the Controlled Substance Act at all on any of the lists. I hope it unlocks the ability to research what I believe will be the myriad benefits of this plant. Like the what it does, even on the high level way I explained the endocrine system right now, what it does has the ability to change medicine for everything from, it already has proven to be effective in treating seizures and anxiety, which are completely different sorts of disorders. So we know there is power, and we need way more systematic research on exactly how to use it properly.
And it goes back to what you said. Can be such a controversial topic.
And for sure.
I do love what you're saying about all these benefits that no one gets to hear about because of how past governments have like completely gotten it out of the forefront.
Absolutely. And I guess it's a balancing act, like you said. We don't want to go out there and be like, come on, everybody, let's like all smoke weed together. not a good idea. The brain is a developing organ. The same reason it's so powerful to hopefully treat disease is a reason why you don't want to introduce it to a developing brain. In fact, like the receptors that cannabinoids bind to, they multiply during adolescence. So you don't want to short circuit that right now, right? So being controversial is it's the right thing. It's the right thing for parents to tell their children not to smoke weed. However, being controversial as some sort of quote unquote gateway drug or as some sort of invitation to a life of crime, that is manufactured. It's been manufactured and reinforced for decades. This is not some sort of conspiracy theory. We have literal proof from the administration that it manufactured it.
Yeah. And while that's certainly the truth, there have been some states, as we talked about earlier, that are seeming to break that and legalize marijuana. So how did that start? And why is the legalization of marijuana such a good step in the right direction?
So it's actually another fascinating dorky topic, because one might ask, hold on, if cannabis is a Schedule I drug federally, how come it's allowed to be legal in states? And that's a very boring constitutional law conversation around federalism. So basically, even though the government said, no, this is bad in 1970, state proponents of cannabis, and in fact, a lot of doctors, started rallying together to try to make it legal on a state basis. And California was the first state to make it legal, Proposition something, 1990s. And since then, many states followed suit. First, medical became legal, and then many of the states switched to rec. So now we're at 23 states that have a full recreational cannabis program. And the numbers are kind of staggering, Ryan. Like in last year, actual revenue was $13.2 billion. Projections are for it to be like $51 billion. California has the largest percentage of that. Last year, it was $5.9 billion, which is pretty much enough to support a small nation. It's rivaling our other two main cash crops, which are grapes and almonds. Yes. Okay. It is. People forget it. It is a plant. It is an agricultural product with a lot of uses.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I know like a big part of why we're improving so much in this economy is because of organizations like Citizen Grown. So can we talk a little bit more about Citizen Grown's model and what compelled you to join specifically?
Absolutely. So our little piece of the cannabis economy is, it comes from a motivation to level the playing field, to allow people access to those enormous numbers that I'm telling you about, because on the other side of the social justice landscape of this is the fact that this is going to be an enormous business. And without the right people in control or the right watchdogs, it very, very quickly could go the way of big pharma, and money and wealth and power can be concentrated in the hands of the few. And it already is going that way. So Citizen Grown is a response to that. And it's a way to democratize growing. We have a tech product, which is a growing box, and it's an almost fully automated product. And we put it into people's, we go into communities most hit by the war on drugs, and we put these boxes into people's homes. They do very little. It grows a crop. We go and collect the crop and we sell it, and we share the profits. Wow. So that's the pie in the sky idea behind Citizen Grown. It's a response not only to the fact that tech is going to be involved in any new industry, but also to the fact that, unfortunately, as like I said, we have 23 states now that are legally rec. Unfortunately, try as they might, and some try better than others, no state has effectively rolled out efficacious social justice program yet. Many have tried. People give a lot of lip service and a lot of heart to the fact that we owe, that it's not fair. We haven't even talked about this yet, that there are people literally languishing in jail for what we're doing to make money. People are in jail right now for selling weed. Like, that's mind-boggling, right? But I'll get back to that. But Citizen Grown addresses that specifically in our own small way by finding criminally impacted people, people who are have been let out of jail for petty cannabis crimes, and giving them a piece of this cannabis economy.
And actually, let's talk about that a bit more now. Like, why is it that we're not going to let these people who are in jail for cannabis consumption, despite the fact that it's legal now, why aren't we letting them out?
Exactly. So I it's kind of tricky, right? But because it is still a Schedule I federal, it's because it's still federally illegal, even though you can go to, not you, I can go to a dispensary right here in California and buy my cannabis. There are people in California jails who are there for selling that. It is, when I first tell people this sometimes, it is so preposterous, they think I must be wrong. They're like, no way. There's no way people are still in jail for that. They are. They are. And until it is not, until cannabis is decriminalized federally, those people can still be in federal jail.
Well, it seems like we got a lot of improvement economically and also legislatively.
We are at a inflection point. We are at a moment where there is absolutely improvement. There also is a growing appetite in the country, not only for social justice, like people don't hear that about jail and they're appalled. So there's an appetite for that. There's an appetite for reform. And perhaps most importantly, there is a growing appetite for solving the mess of this Schedule I situation. Like, another maybe boring point is that because it's still a Schedule I drug, companies cannot succeed. We don't have access to normal banking. We can't get a bank loan. My bank account for Citizen Grown gets shut down at least once a month because some sort of AI algorithm thinks it's somehow cannabis related and it gets shut down. There's a host of ways that cannabis companies, even those that quote unquote don't touch the plant, are treated as second-class citizens in the business community in this country. And the big dream for cannabis is that these companies at post-legalization will create jobs and create enormous, enormous tax benefits for the cities where the companies enter. And until these kind of boring things like bank access are solved, that dream can't come to fruition.
Okay, well, if that's the dream, what are some of the greatest successes that Citizen Grown has achieved to get there so far?
Well, we are a tiny company, but we are excited about what's to come. So we have pilot programs in Detroit and Oklahoma City, where we put these boxes in these people's homes, and we're proving the model that not only can compete with the big farms, but we also can lift up people and allow them access to a piece of this cannabis economy. And at the same time, make it more than that paycheck. We also have an educational program that surrounds our citizens, wherein large universities will come in and teach what to do with that money after you get it, some basic financial planning, things like that. And we have cannabis educators coming in so that people who are interested in actual cultivation or maybe owning their own cannabis brand or dispensary one day have the tools to do that themselves. So that sort of empowerment and access to resources is something that we're hoping to lift the veil on. We do think it could make a big difference, not just as some sort of like symbolic victory, but actually a way to create this economic change. Because like I said, this cannabis economy is just getting started. The numbers I said about 50 billion in a couple of years, that's still with those projections are based on 23 states going rec. They'll all go rec. our small successes are person by person, hence the name Citizen Grown. We really believe that the many deserve a place in this economic revolution.
That is really great. And I'm glad that you're working on this. But there are all these successes, but then on the flip side, there's also the challenges. So, I mean, assuming that there is still quite a stigma around cannabis organizations, what have been some of the major challenges for Citizen Grown?
Oh, a regulation. The fact that we're still waiting for banking laws and for deschedule adjacent legal data, but also the stigma, because people are getting fed so much disinformation. People come to me, well-meaning people are like, I read that people are overdosing now on cannabis. I read that cannabis is now fentanyl. There's a deluge. The same way that we have a 24 news hour cycle about everything, that same thing applies to cannabis. And there's so much fear and lack of appropriate information that people are fighting the wrong fights. Legalization will be safer for everybody. Federally regulated cannabis is a much better idea than black market cannabis. Concepts like that need to be sort of brought to the forefront in the conversation, so that the fear about what if my teenager smokes weed at a party is put into perspective.
Wow. Yeah, that is quite the challenge in a lot of like different social justice aspects, propaganda.
There's so much. We barely have enough time to like list them.
But there are
a lot of great organizations if people want to get involved, especially on the regulatory reform and social justice aspects of it, especially kids, right? There's one that I love called the Last Prisoner Project, and they will not stop until the last person in jail for cannabis crimes is released. And it's an amazing organization. Another one's called Normal, N-O-R-M-L. And that's lobbying and rallying for a better legislation.
Quick question. Do all of the cannabis organizations work together ever?
You would wish that to be true. Sometimes they get a little bit parochial, and sometimes but around legalization, there's a united front.
That's great. Okay. And so here, this is probably the most important question.
You saved it for last.
So what is a message you'd like our audience, who are mostly youth from 13 to 25, to really walk away with? How can they join the fight for justice without like doing cannabis?
It is a great question. Like those, there's so many ways to get involved. First and foremost is to understand the facts about what cannabis does, so that when you hear misinformation, you can fix it. Secondly, Ryan, honestly, understanding the history, I think, is important for you guys and important for everybody in terms of what our country has done and how we have the tools to fix it by being active about legislation in the future that addresses any original sin we have around where we are right now.
Yeah. And do you think that social media can have a big play in this? Just wondering.
What do you think the answer is to that?
Yeah, I know the answer to that.
Of course it can. And you know, we're never going to get rid of the social media images that glamorize drugs. They're going to be there. But when you can also understand, when you can marry that with the social media, such as Last Prisoner Project, where you see that there's an actual cause that is probably more important than the party aspect of it, then social media can be a cause, a force for good.
Yeah, that's really great. Okay. I do have one quick thing to ask you.
Okay.
What's next? What's next for Citizen Grown?
You know, it's actually cool. So we want to make these pilot programs into larger and larger programs, so that we will have a decentralized grow across the United States. And then it'll become a cannabis brand. So people who can walk into dispensaries will be able to buy Citizen Grown product and know it goes back to the communities that we're helping.
That's really great. That's cool.
Thanks.
Okay. So yeah, thank you so much, Ms. Stewart, for all of this. We're helping you.
Oh, thank you. It was really fun to talk to you.
And it's great that you're helping youth like me understand the complexities in this industry and why organizations like Citizen Grown are needed to keep legalized cannabis affordable, to allow disenfranchised communities an opportunity to gain something from it, and especially to shed light on the injustices of the judicial system in the last few decades. So I'm really excited to continue to follow what you and Citizen Grown can accomplish.
Thank you. Always reach out if you have any questions, okay?
Of course. And quickly, we do not want kids to do drugs.
No, do not do this for a long time.
Yep. Okay, so thank you so much, Masood. This has been amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for the 31st episode of A Change of the Chance. I hope you learned something new, and I'll see you in the next episode.